Hello and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are very much in recovery from a weekend in Vegas and also very excited about their new ice machines. Anyways, we are your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. I am excited about my ice machine, but I am also in recovery from Mother's Day. I need a couple of days to recover. I think that you might actually win the prize on that one, Angie.
Oh, for how my Mother's Day went?
Yeah.
I really ran the gamut yesterday of like things that could have happened on Mother's Day. I think starting at maybe like 2 o'clock in the morning, threw up $100 worth of sushi. Woke up in the morning. Let's see. Got in an Uber to the airport with my two friends, Josh and Richard. And we were all just like feeling real rough. Uber gets in a car crash. So we have to like run through New York, New York. We're just like, we know we're supposed to get our next Uber at the Statue of Liberty. And so we're like trying to get through this casino. Oh my God.
It's like the Amazing Race.
Oh, it's terrible. And then got to the airport. Someone was clipping their nails in the airport lounge, which I've never witnessed that before. And I really.
It's absolutely disgusting when somebody clips their nails in public. I've seen it. I've actually been on a plane when that's happened.
No.
And I'm like, no. If one of those hits me in the eye, we're going to have a problem. And I'm going to throw up on you.
Oh, the plane home from Vegas is always so funny, though. Like a plane out of Vegas on Sunday is a very somber affair, right? Everyone is like, okay, we're going to get home. Got home, changed the grit on my rock polisher because that's the thing I do now.
Wait, and, what?
Yeah, I got a rock polisher.
So random.
And then I hung out with my toddler and watched How to Train Your Dragon. And I was just like, oh, I did all the things yesterday.
Okay, I have so many questions about the rock polisher. I'm going to have to like file that away in my mind for a moment. So when you were there, did you gamble at all? Are you a gambler?
I did not. Some of the people I was with did slots, but nobody like went hardcore gambling. We went to Shania on Friday, Shania Twain.
Oh my God.
And
I karaoke'd her very many times.
Because she's amazing. So we were like so excited. It was going to be this nostalgia like for all of us mid-30s millennials. We're super stoked about this. She was not great.
Are you serious?
It broke my little heart a lot. Yeah. So she like came on stage and she started singing like zero energy. And so then she sort of like stopped singing and like kind of like talked to people. Mm. And then she sang like half of Happy Birthday and then sort of stopped and scattered a little bit and then went backstage, probably did a line of something. I don't know. And then like came back and was a different person.
Okay.
How are you? How's your new ice machine?
It's dramatic. back in the simple folks world where we don't go to Vegas on a whim. But we do buy ice machines on Amazon. Why do we buy ice machines on Amazon? My household must be the most difficult on ice machines of any household in America, because between the three of us that live in this house, which is my husband, who's amazing, and then my 11-year-old, we're three kind of normal-ish people who drink kind of normal-ish drinks. I mean, we do like to drink vodka soda from time to time. We use an ice machine like normal people should, and we have broken probably, I would say, six ice machines in our lifetimes together. So that means in the last 11 years. Yes. And I don't know why. Like, I really can't even. Right now, as we speak, there is duct tape on the ice machine in my freezer because the bottom of it somehow just gave up. So I finally decided I was going to take matters into my own hands. Also, I like to chew ice, which I know is terrible. And do not send me any emails about how I'm jacking my teeth up. Like, I already
know.
Not
looking for feedback.
I'm just telling you how I am, and I'm never changing. It's like
full
a genetic
Shania
thing. Exactly. My boots can be under any fucking bed, okay? And I don't want any judgment. But this ice machine is cool because the ice is like super soft. You start chewing on the ice and it's like you make a snow cone in your mouth. This is how I know I'm old, because it's little things like this that you're like, oh my God, where has this been my whole life? And now we're obsessed with the ice machine. Yeah, you got Vegas, I got ice machines. We probably should talk about what we're doing today. So we are talking about privilege logs, but we're doing it in a new way. We're doing it through a flock talk. And what is the flock talk? Well, they are episodes where we're sharing the most information that we can in a little bite-sized way. In fact, if you're a food nerd like me, I would say the flock talk is like an amuse-bouche. We're giving you smaller topics in a smaller, shorter format.
A little tasting menu of e-discovery. Topics. Yeah. Let's start basic, just like super, super basic. What the flock is a privilege log?
So the federal rules of civil procedure, specifically Rule 26B5, allows parties to withhold documents or data because they're protected for some certain reason. For example, it could be attorney-client privilege. We'll talk more about the reasons why we can withhold information here in a minute. The privilege log is the way that the parties have communicated that. They're telling you, I'm leaving this document or this data out. And the reason I'm leaving it out is because I'm asserting privilege, which means I have the right to keep it out because I'm trying to protect the client. Angie, can you explain the types of privilege that we can withhold?
Flock, yeah, I can. Privilege just allows you to withhold information, and there are a couple big ones that we want to hit. First, like Brie mentioned, attorney-client privilege. That privilege covers any communications between a lawyer and their client, even a potential client, so long as that communication is made to get legal advice. And we could have a whole episode on any one of these privileges and like what is and isn't, but for right now, we're just sort of flagging them for you so you know what's going to actually show up on a privilege log. So another big one is the work product privilege or work product doctrine, and that allows parties to withhold any material that's collected or prepared in anticipation of litigation or for litigation. Next one, joint defense privilege. So sometimes parties will kind of group up if they're all getting sued and like share costs for an expert or something like that, just because litigation is super expensive. The joint defense privilege is an extension of the attorney-client privilege and work product privileges. Wow. But it covers communications with your co-defendants and their lawyers that are made in furtherance of that joint defense agreement. And then finally, we have executive privilege, which is communications that are made within the executive branch of a government. And one thing I wanted to point out here, I think I've talked about representing tribes before. And so we had an interesting privilege log moment with this privilege, because when you're representing a tribe, you can withhold anything that happens, you know, in their council sessions or depending on how that tribe structures their government. So this isn't just like the U.S. government or the president or something like that. You know, this applies to other government entities as well.
That's anyway, super interesting.
That's an amuse-bouche of privileges, if you will. Brie, can you explain what information is going to be on a privilege log?
Yeah, well, so going back to the rules, anybody who knows me knows I hate rules, but let's follow them sometimes. You could break them, but the consequences might not be what you want.
It'd be really
yeah. That is my parenting session for today. So the federal rules, they tell us two things. Number one, you have to make the claim to begin with. Hey, this document is privileged, and this is why. Number two, you have to describe the nature of the information in a way that it allows the receiving party to assess the claim. Why are you saying it's privileged? Give me a little bit more detail. The rule does not tell us how to do this, though. So just like any rule, there's always gray area and loopholes. So we all have to figure out a way in which we provide this information to one another. So we're generally going to negotiate specific fields, and we're going to memorialize that agreement within our ESI protocol. As you're kind of meeting and conferring and you're coming up with your ESI protocols or your discovery orders, you want to consider how you're going to treat the fields in a privilege log. For example, it's very typical that you might use a unique ID for a document, like a Bates number. You're going to definitely want to include what type of privilege you are claiming. You also want to think about basic metadata that you want to include, because you want to give the other party enough information that they know what the document is, but you don't want to give them too much information to where you disclose the information that you're trying to protect. Giving them some metadata like author or sender or recipient, or including dates like the sent date, received date, or modified date of a document, giving them the title of a document or a file name or an email subject, Those are all things that are very typical to be found in a privilege lock. Also, your court or your judge might have specific requirements, so make sure you check that out before you get started.
Definitely do that. And one other thing I'll note is because we don't have specific instructions about what goes in a priv log, fights about them are super common. So since 2020 alone, there have been at least 1,200 court cases where the parties have disagreed over whether documents should or shouldn't be included. And those are just ones where like people have actually gone to court and litigated it and there's been a decision and it's been published in the Reporter and all of that. This isn't all the like little fights that happen because those happen in almost every case.
Well, of course, the cynic in me is thinking like, well, what parties have taken advantage of this? Hey, I got a smoking gun here that's going to like be super detrimental to my client. So instead of being forthcoming with it, how about I try to hide it under the umbrella of attorney-client privilege so I don't have to produce it? And it's very hard, I would think, for the other side to be like, well, based on your metadata, I can see that you are hiding all the facts. So what is a way that parties sort this out if they have a suspicion that the other party might not be following all the rules per se?
Parties will often, it's called challenging the priv log. One thing a court can do, like a super powerful function, is something called in-camera review. This is where the court will actually go in and look at the privileged documents by itself, right? Like it's just the judge, parties aren't involved. And the judge goes through and actually makes a call. He determines whether that document is or isn't privileged or whether partially privileged and needs to be redacted. And I've been involved in litigation where we've had a lot of in-camera review. Hot take here, but the more you ask the court to do this, the more annoyed at you they're going to get. Like do not want to deal with this. It's annoying.
That's very true. It's like coming to mom and dad with every little problem that you have when you're a kid. Yeah. Like all of a sudden your head just completely gets chopped off. Like not a good idea. But I mean, really, a lot of fights do ensue with these types of arguments back and forth because a lot of parties want to kind of tuck away those documents that have the conversations between client and attorney that tells the full truth and nothing but the truth about what really went down. And so it can be a very sticky situation. But I know that privilege logs serve more of a function than just like protecting the parties from disclosing more than they have to that might be under that privilege umbrella.
Yeah, well, you know, they're really important in litigation, you know, apart from just like the federal rules make us do it and whatever. We as litigants have to justify our lack of transparency. The federal rules and, you know, your court rules and all of the rules that we must follow, they're all there to ensure that discovery is conducted efficiently, but also to ensure that parties get as full a picture as possible. Not to get too like pie in the sky about it or whatever, but litigation is at its essence, at its core, it's a search for the truth. And a big part of that is discovery of all the information related to that dispute. And so in order to get to the heart of what happened, the truth of the matter, you got to share your information. But when we withhold things because of privilege, when we are not transparent because of those privileges, we're taking away a piece of that puzzle. You know, there are really good reasons why we take those pieces away. I mean, one reason we have attorney-client privilege is so that clients and lawyers can speak candidly to one another, so that clients can give their lawyers all of the information and the lawyers can do their best to represent them. All of that being said, you know, we have to be fair when we're withholding things. And because we withhold documents and data and information only when the privilege justifies overriding that public interest in transparency, we need to make a log of it. And we need to make sure that we're at least being transparent about what we are hiding, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that it's important to note that privilege logs are important to discuss during various times without that whole EDRM cycle. For example, you want to think about privilege logs when you have that meet and confer. You're going back and forth with the opposing party and trying to decide how you're going to treat e-discovery and how you're going to communicate with one another throughout the course of that litigation. It's an important thing that you wanted to keep in mind when you're creating your ESI protocol. I want to be able to document exactly how we're going to communicate this one with one another. It's also something that you deal with a lot within the course of review, which we'll talk about that here in a moment. We have to talk about privilege tags and permissions of who can mark what for privilege and who can overturn privilege and what does that mean. And then production is another stage in the EDRM journey where we have to think about not producing privileged documents and how we're QCing for that and how we're presenting that to opposing counsel.
We've pretty well covered the why we have privilege logs and what they are. Should we talk about the how?
Like, oh yeah, I totally got that because I have been the worker bee that's had to make many a privilege log in my day. So, of course, just as most things with e-discovery, depending on the case, it kind of deciphers how you go about creating a privilege log. And I realize that we're talking to people today who might be dealing with a very small matter. And then we're talking to people today that might be dealing with a huge, ginormous, like, all hands on for many years matter. Talking about this in general is kind of hard because it can greatly vary depending on what you're dealing with. So generally speaking, privileged documents are identified within review. So when you're reviewing documents, you're looking for things that would fall under that privilege category and you're creating flags or tags or you're labeling them somehow so that you remember when you go back to produce documents that they have to be withheld. And then you're also remembering when you withhold them that you have to record the details of those documents or data on the privilege log. So the way that we conduct that review kind of determines a lot about how the privilege log is pieced together. Once we have all of the data identified that needs to be included on the privilege log, we can make the determination of how we want to organize it. I've gone through all of my documents. I'm ready to produce them. I need to create my privilege log. How do I create it? Do I organize this by category? Maybe every single one of the categories that Angie talked about earlier as to why we withhold documents needs to be secluded to itself. Maybe that's how the parties have agreed to talk about this information. Or maybe I'm going to present it to you in a table that's just in order of Bates number, because that's the way that it is in my database. And I'm going to just present it to you in a big fat spreadsheet, because that's the way that I'm easily able to manage that information. Kind of determining how you want to organize it is step one. Number two is, what is the method of how we compile this information? Maybe we're old school, 1982, and we're looking at a box of documents and we put post-it notes on what is privileged. And we're going to manually create a Word table or an Excel table that's going to have every single one of those documents and the stamp that we put on it, Bates label stamp, to identify what's on your privilege log. Like, that is super duper old school. And yes, I have done that and it's okay. But we could just welcome ourselves into the year of 2024 and use technology for a benefit and have those documents within an e-discovery tool that allows us electronically to put those labels and tags on the documents with using coding panels so that we can identify what needs to be held for privilege. When we introduce technology, of course, it introduces all kinds of other things to think about. Like, maybe we want to have a coding panel just for privilege. Maybe we only want to allow certain people to review for privilege because they might be the only ones that really understand all the reasons for privilege that Angie was talking about earlier and why we might want to make those determinations. And maybe for every single one of those determinations, we have a separate label that indicates that. So those are things to think about when we're going about reviewing. Ultimately, we're going to use the way that we've indicated those documents need to be treated in a variety of ways going forward. Number one, we're going to QC that information. We're going to run reports. Who marked what for what privilege? Number two, we probably want to look at any privilege that was overturned. Why was it overturned? Why did Angie say this is privilege for something? And then Bree came back and made a different decision on that document.
Yep.
Is that something that we need to take in consideration? Is that something we need to correct? Is that something that we need to look into further for other documents? What do we need to do with that? Number three, we want to look at all the documents that we've marked for privilege and all the documents we've marked for production and make sure we're not trying to produce things that are privileged. And if we are trying to produce things that are privileged, we want to make sure that we've marked them in such a way that we are treating them the way that they need to be treated in production. And I know we haven't got to the place where we're talking about production in our EDRM series, but what I'm meaning is that we don't want to produce a full document that we've marked as privileged. If there's a portion of the document that needs to be redacted, or if the document in its entirety needs to be withheld and a slip sheet needs to be produced instead, We want to make sure all those things are happening, and we want to make sure to QC for that. I feel like we've gone past the amuse-bouche stage at this point.
We're getting into appetizers. So let's keep it at amuse-bouche. We'll wrap it up. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to our first Flock Talk, Foul Language Advisory. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends, family, and coworkers about us, but only the cool ones. And of course, please hit us up on LinkedIn or at admin@ediscoverychicks.com with your thoughts, questions, and drink recommendations. Until next time.